Well, today I'd like to talk to you about Cindy Lou Who from The Grinch That Stole Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. We're looking at that kind of as an Advent study throughout this time of the year. And Cindy Lou Who is the one that is our focus today. And there is a few different movies that have the story. There's the original back in the 60s, basically a reading of Dr. Seuss, with that being Boris Karloff doing the narration and the voices and other items in it. And then there's the movie that came out with Jim Carrey. And then there is the movie that has come out recently in 2018. But my memories of Cindy Lou Who was this cute little girl that has an idea concerning how things should be. And she confronts the Grinch in the original, and he was able to lie and get out of Whoville with all of the Christmas presents. And then ultimately we get to the end of the story and his heart is changed and things along that line. I love the naivety of Cindy Lou Who. I also like the fact that she takes a stand, and she takes a stand very strongly in the Jim Carrey film. Her heart is filled with compassion for this poor lost soul, the Grinch, and it's her desire, her deepest desire, that he be brought back into the family of Whoville. And I think that's a great way to look at things. She wants him to be a part of the Christmas celebration. But because of previous times with the Grinch, the mayor of Whoville doesn't want to listen to Cindy Lou Who's suggestion. The conversation between them develops. One would quote from the book, then the other would respond with a quote from the book. Finally, it came down to a very important, crucial crisis point in the discussion. And then in this moment, the mayor of Whoville quoted from the book, only to hear Cindy Lou respond, "It doesn't say that. What page?" And she catches him because he's using the words from the book to benefit him. You see, as it unfolds, it's clear that both of them knew the book very well. The problem was, one's using the book with a full understanding and a right interpretation for the benefit of everybody, and then one is using the book for selfish motivations, choosing to pick certain spots out of the context to validate those selfish motives. And it would have been easy for little Cindy Lou Who to be duped and intimidated by the older and wiser mayor had she not known for herself what the book had said. And it just made me think of the Genesis 3 passage where we read, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, 'Did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden?'" And so you see this dialogue back and forth. And I like how R.C. Sproul puts it. He says, "Did God say you shall not eat of any trees in the garden? The question again in the ancient version is, hath God said you shall not eat of any trees in the garden?" It's a very, very interesting question. You might wonder why the serpent raised the question in the first place. Was he just saying in Columbo fashion, "There's just one thing that I'm not quite sure about. Do you mind if I ask you a personal question? Let's see if I have it right here. Did God say that you shall not eat of any trees of the garden? Is that what he said? Just wanting to get the record straight?" Perhaps Adam and Eve were to assume that the serpent was doing a job of recording the facts for posterity. Sproul goes on and he says, "I don't think that's what it's about here. But before I suggest what it is about, let me indicate another alternative. Do you think that the serpent did not know what God had said? Do you think that the serpent was ignorant of the terms of the probationary test that God had put before his creatures? I think the serpent knew very well what God had said. But listen to the subtlety of the question. Hath God said, 'You shall not eat of any trees in the garden'? What's the suggestion here?" Satan knew very well that was not the case. They say, "No, in fact, God said, we could eat freely of all the trees of the garden, but one. And that one, of course, he said, if we touched, we would surely die. Existentialist Jean-Paul Sartre in the 20th century had made it a matter of evangelistic zeal to maintain that unless a man is utterly and completely autonomous, he is not in fact free. Sartre gives one of the most fascinating and clever arguments against the existence of God I have ever read. Traditionally, we have argued, if there's man, and we have to explain and account for his creation, then there must be a God. Sartre turns that around. He says, if man is, God cannot be, because intrinsic to our notion of humanity is the concept of human subjectivity and freedom. And if there is a God to whom we have ultimately accountability and responsibility, a God who has sovereignty over us, then we do not have autonomy. If we do not have autonomy, we do not have freedom. If we do not have freedom, we do not have subjectivity. If we do not have subjectivity, we do not have humanity. Ergo, since we do have these things, there is no God. The point is very subtle and utterly completely free. You are utterly and completely free. You are not free at all. And Satan is raising that very point here. Hath God said, you shall not eat of any trees in the garden? Every one of us has encountered this question of freedom in our own lives, particularly those of us who are parents. I love this illustration. My daughter comes and asks, Daddy, can I go to this rock concert in Pittsburgh on Friday night? I say, I'm sorry, honey, I have to say no. And what do you suppose her response is? You never let me do anything. Put that one restriction there, and the natural reaction is, I'm not free at all. Unless I can have total freedom, absolute autonomy, I'm not really free. And that's the subtlety of the serpent that is being repeated again and again and again, even down to this very day. And so when you and I look at the book and we're honest about its interpretation, what it common sensely says we take in through common sense, then there's a beauty to the receiving it and being obedient to it. And that is freedom, because he's actually keeping us from harm. He's keeping us from what could hurt us. Gives us the freedom to do that, to make those mistakes, but holds us back if we so desire. And so when I think about Cindy Lou Who, I think about somebody today that wants to be honest with what the book says. Do you want to be honest with what the book says? Or do you want to twist it and use it for your own benefit? I want the truth. Even though sometimes it's hard, it tells me the truth about myself. And sometimes that hurts. The reality is, though, only through that will proper life change happen. And then I can have total freedom to be the person that God has created me to be.